I hope that for women in business, we have more acceptance around talking about business and particularly how we help each other and getting over that hump of saying, hey, you know, we're going out to dinner and I'm going to pitch you on buying my thing. That's a weird first step to take if you have never done it before. And I think I have taught myself that lesson that helping very often means let's get some dollars involved in a way that makes sense.
Hey, it's Adam Schoenfeld. Welcome back to the Built in Seattle podcast, where I chat with Seattle's top entrepreneurs, investors, and business leaders about how they think and how they operate. If you like the podcast, then I think you'll love my new short weekly email where I distill one favorite lesson from these interviews and throw in some bonus content like a book recommendation or something that one of these great guests thinks you should check out. You can subscribe at psjournal.substack.com for the Pike Street Journal, or just send me an email, adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com, and I'll add you to the list. On this episode, I talked with Ambika Singh, who's the chief boss lady at Armoire. We'll talk about that title in detail. She's raised about $5 million and has 50 employees based in Seattle. They're trying to build a dream closet for women. She's got a lot of great lessons. Her religion about learning from others was one of my favorite topics. We talked about her path between startups and Microsoft and business school and how she arrived at the idea for Armoire, the obstacles she's faced, and the community that she's built in Seattle. I hope you enjoy the conversation. I'm here with the one, the only, Ambika Singh, who's the chief boss lady at Armoire. And welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
Okay, chief boss lady. That's a new title for me. I saw that on your LinkedIn. Where did that come from?
It's a good story. So when we were very small, maybe 5 or 6 people, we realized that we probably all needed a title that ascribed some value to what we were doing. And so I've always been the sort of the CEO, but it felt very strange to me at that moment to title myself chief executive officer of my 4 friends who were all sitting in this trench together. So my idea was that I would be the chief wizard. And my brilliant product woman at the time was like, Bika, we are a bunch of women running a fashion company. Do you think that we already have a tough enough go at this? We were going out to raise money. She was like, please, can you use an adult title? Something, anything. So this was our compromise. But to me, it felt like it had a degree of seriousness because we really were trying to make a comment. Boss lady actually has a lot of sort of negative connotations, particularly from the generation below us, where the boss lady was a negative way to refer to a woman who had some amount of power and was ostensibly trying to gain more. So we wanted to recapture that term, but it also had a degree of levity for me that felt natural for the stage that we were at. So that's where it came from. We've taken a lot of feedback over the last 3 years about it, positive and negative. And so about once every, I'd say 6 months, we come together as a team and think like, is this the right thing? But you know, we started to own it. So I enjoy it.
Did you know at the time or think that it would be such a point of feedback from people outside of the company?
I did not. I never did. I would say it's probably one of the most commented, in degrees of seriousness from the feedback as well, from, you know, just light and sort of, hey, I love your title, to, do you understand what that means? Like, have you had the full kind of, you know, history lesson on it? So I had no idea.
Has there been any time where you've really questioned, you know, pulling it back? Has anybody changed your mind about it or almost changed your mind? I guess you haven't changed your mind because it's still there.
I have not personally, but I would say that the company, our collective thought has gotten very close to changing it. And I have been a longtime supporter of holding on to it. But I mean, like all things in startups, there will be perhaps a season where that changes and that'll be okay. But for today, I'm attached to it.
Okay. So no religion, but right now a strong point of view.
Correct. Absolutely.
Well, I've noticed you do a few of these little things that are a little outside of the norm. Like your email signature says sent stylishly, which I thought was a really nice touch.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about those two things in the same box, but I think that's very valid. I think for me, it kind of points to perhaps a different thing. This is my life. I love this company. I think about it all the time. And to me, that's sort of the best thing about it personally, is that it is my absolute obsession. And so I think when I do things like think of my email signature, I'm just sort of like implicitly thinking about the company and like, how do I give it a little boost if I can, or remind people about what we're doing. And send stylishly makes you think about your clothes. So maybe you think about us. So I think it's more that it's like, I'm not actively thinking about how do I bring Armoire into what I do. It's just there because I'm an obsessed weirdo.
It makes me think about my own experiences of the company's brand being so integrated with the founder's personal identity. And sometimes that line just gets incredibly blurred, but I've seen it show up. It's funny that you didn't think of the scent stylishly, because I was like, oh, I've never seen that before. And it stuck out to me. It had the exact effect that you said about thinking about fashion when we were just having an email exchange.
It's interesting that you say that when the brands become intimately intertwined, because I'll tell you another funny story. So my name, Ambika, is not an easy name to pronounce. And I have had long resentment against my parents for like giving me such a hard name to pronounce. Like, you guys, couldn't you have given me a little bit of like a leg up in the world where I didn't have to re-correct people every time they said my name? Guess what? When it was my opportunity to name something, I gave her a very difficult name to pronounce and didn't even think twice. So we started the company in Boston. Armoire is still known as Amois, or some like version, some Boston version of Armoire. It gets misspelled, and there inevitably, I would say this one happens even more perhaps in the feedback on the Boss Lady. The confusion between who is Armoire and who is Ambika is like prevalent. I think they're just both hard words and they sound sort of similar. So it is very surprising that I didn't think, after holding this lifelong grudge, that perhaps I should name the company Closet, or like Blue Closet or something that just wasn't so difficult.
Right. So maybe you secretly like that little language challenge you give people.
Maybe.
To keep it going. So let's talk about Armoire and just what is it and where are you in the business?
So the business is 3.5 years old and it is a dream closet. I wanted to create a place where women could derive joy and happiness from their closet on a really sustainable proposition. What that means to me is that when you open the doors of it, either digital or physical, it delights you and it is easy to have fun in it and it doesn't break your wallet and it doesn't break the environment. And so to make those kind of like dual dreams come true, we've employed two important things. So the closet is rental first. So what that means is like we own all the inventory that goes into this magical closet, which now number tens of thousands of items. And we recommend them to you. So we never barf the tens of thousands of items at you and ask you to go for it, because that's neither delightful nor fun. But instead, we are your personal stylist. And the fun part about that is that we can do what your best friend would do, where she says, hey, you should really try this. Oh, today's not the day for trying things. That's totally cool. Here, why don't you try this thing that is safe and makes you feel great. But basically, like, we wanted to have a smart enough recommendation system that we could actually have that kind of interchange. Walking into your best friend's closet is like another metaphor that we kind of internalize online. And so it's a super interesting combination of a pretty intense logistics challenge. We move every day, literally tens of thousands of garments around a kind of like four-stop process. The average item sits in our warehouse in a duration that looks more like a fresh food warehouse than it does a clothing warehouse, because the things are moving so quickly. And we marry that with recommendation technology that we've taken lots of inspiration from Spotify and Amazon.
I love it. And I want to talk more about what it means to actually exist in the real world and have to work with tens of thousands of physical items. But just for context, where are you in terms of like funding raise or growth or however you like to just give context to people on the stage of the company?
Yeah, so 3.5 years later, we're shipping to every state in the union. Some on my sort of like 2 a.m. deep dives, I love like imagining what these like Alabama women are doing and how it comes back to us and goes out to these Hawaii women. There's something about the shared asset that I find like super interesting. So every state in the union, we've been through 3 funding rounds. We have close to 50 employees and thousands of customers and tens of thousands of garments. So it is a small going to a mid-sized company with a big proposition and really big dreams.
What was the original inspiration for Armoire? Where did the idea come from or the insight that led you to the business?
Yeah, so great question. So I went to business school in 2014 with an idea that perhaps would like to start a company. I'd been really fortunate to work at a number of great startups. I'd worked at Microsoft. So I felt like I had kind of an idea that from a stage perspective, I'd like to do something with a very small team, something that I believed in. But fast forward through my first year, and I don't have an idea and I don't have a team. So I went back to Boston and I started trying all kinds of different ideas. And it was like an amazing place to make this happen because if you think about the environment that I was in, there was people that had come from all different walks of life. So just my access to ideas through other people was an amazing place. And so I tried, and when I say I tried ideas, so for me, the process was like first sort of thinking about things on my own. And it really was a big step to even have the confidence to talk to other people about it, because I felt like a lot of the stuff I was thinking about was so foolish. So I'm not the person at the cocktail table who's like just shooting off, like, you know, we all have friends like that who like they have a new idea every day. I wasn't that person. So I would sort of like go through this individual process of thinking about ideas and then finally get the courage to like tell somebody. And that was my first step. So the things that I told people about spanned everything from, I got pretty deep on thinking about elderly care in terms of loneliness. I thought about, so most people's feet are 2 different sizes. I thought about like, how could we create a warehouse where you could actually buy the correct size? I thought about women's dry cleaning. There's a huge pink tax on dry cleaning, and that was motivating to me. But the thing about this idea, and this continues to be why I'm glad that it was the one that stuck, was that I kept coming back to it. And like, I wanted to talk to people about it. And I wanted to think about it. And I want to think about like, what does the math look like about how many garments do you actually need for one person when it becomes 2 people? What does that look like? Like, what is the preference distance between person A and person B? And customers were always incredibly motivated. I still like it, on dark days, I always like think about what customers' faces look like when you describe an endless closet that people don't have to own. Oh, and by the way, you don't really have to like mess through the whole thing. Women have always been excited about that proposition. And so the big reason that it stuck was that I got so much kind of positive feedback, both from myself as well as from everyone I talked to, that it seemed like this was something that I could stick with.
When you said talk to people, so when you have this idea or these different ideas that you're kind of validating or iterating on, you know, just at the idea stage, who are the people that you were talking to and how did you go actually talk to people? Like tactically, how did that work?
Yeah, that's another place that school is an amazing thing because people have time. And so the first group of people were just literally my friends in business school who were around me. And I'm also very lucky. I come from a family of entrepreneurs. And so that is a place where like dinner conversation is like this idea, that idea. So between my immediate circle of friends and my family, those were the first kind of like groups that I talked to. And then beyond the immediate friends, and again, like I'd credit school with this, because there's such a, I think, ingrained culture, particularly in graduate school, of sort of like, hey, this network is only going to be as powerful to you as what you put into it. There's a really strong sense of like trying to help people do what they can. And so that group of the larger group beyond my immediate friends to all of my classmates were incredibly supportive. And I learned from people who had worked in retail or people that had worked in logistics or people who had worked in technology. And I kind of sought them out and bounced the ideas off of them. And like one of the things that kind of makes me cringe because I didn't grow up in that environment is I think sometimes when people like, and when I say young, I mean just young in the process, young entrepreneurs like bring ideas to maybe more seasoned people, they feel like it's their duty to shoot it down or like poke holes in it. I don't know if our more would have emerged if I had been in that kind of environment. So I try to always check myself when young entrepreneurs are coming and ask sort of like constructive questions, but like nobody needs you to shoot their idea in the face. That doesn't help anybody. So I hope that that's something that we can all kind of do to help people push their ideas along.
That's incredible. I haven't heard of many people who found their business school experience to be that productive in terms of like starting them on a path to entrepreneurship. How do you compare the MBA experience to the time at Microsoft and then to your time at early stage startups like TravelPost and Rover? Because I think people are often wondering, you know, if they want to be in your position or they want to found a company, what do you do to get there? Is it even a fair comparison to look at those three different things, relatively speaking, and how they've influenced or help you get to where you are?
I think the relative value is actually been, this might be a particular to me, I have been super fortunate to find amazing people along the way, many of whom are at Armoire now in one way or the other. And so, like, for example, my first summer where we got into MIT's accelerator, it kind of like, it happened essentially overnight type stuff. And I called my best friend from Microsoft, and she came up from the summer and did a lot of the initial branding and like marketing work and all that stuff. And like that Microsoft gave me that relationship and many more. The first person who wrote an angel check into Armoire was somebody I met at Microsoft who was my mentor. And now the person running engineering and technology all up, I met at TravelPost. Rover, when I started at Rover, there were just two of us. And that person helped write the first couple lines of code. And like, so for me, it has been a collection of heroes that all of these companies have given me along the way. And I've been fortunate to hold on to those relationships. And that's what makes Armoire even a possibility.
That's awesome. So not so much the what you were doing, but who you were with and sustaining those relationships. Were you intentional about that along the way at Microsoft and then in your startup experience and then in the MBA about kind of building those long-term relationships, or how did that come to be?
I don't know that I was like intentional about it in terms of like what I was going to get out of it. It was more just like, I do genuinely love people. And there are some that along with my company, I'm also obsessed with people. So there's some of them that have been just, you know, they bring joy and light to my life. And so I hold on to them and they tend to be, lucky me, very smart, very accomplished and great energy. And so I don't know that I was like specifically intent driven other than just like, hey, I really like you. I'm not going to let you go.
Right. Oh, I love that. No, I've looking at my own career, I've often, you know, been too obsessed with the strategies or the problems and like not double down on the people I'm with. And I think that's such a great principle, and not necessarily having like, oh, what am I going to get next from this relationship? But just spending time with the people you want to spend time with. And you were in great places where the context is you're with a lot of smart, motivated people.
Yeah. And that's such a, it's interesting. I think you had a question along the way just about like, how would I have possibly like, maybe what do I know now about how I would have managed that process differently. And I do think, like, knowing what I know now, I didn't realize like how much my professional and personal life was going to be intertwined. Sort of, it seems like forever, because at least if I take the last 15 years, it seems like I can't unentwine them. So I think perhaps I would have tried to be more intentional in that way. I'm not exactly sure what I would have done differently, but just like that realization that those two things for me, and I know that that doesn't work for everybody. Like, some people want to have a difference between what their personal life looks like and what their professional life looks like. Like, mine, it is not that. Like, my husband and I host, you know, our employees, our investors, like, we spend time with them on the weekends. I just went for a hike with a woman who advises my product team. Like, for me, it's all sort of like mixed together, and having that realization of the fact that my life was going to look like that, perhaps I would have been more intentional, to use your word.
Yeah. Now that you've had that realization, has it changed the way you operate now and how you think about, you know, the impact of that going forward?
I think one of the things that it has done for me, and I've had, I've been lucky to sort of like read about this from other people who articulated it better and have conversations about it, but particularly in the women's circles that I was in, I think there was more hesitancy to talk about business when we were doing social stuff. So it was like a cocktail conversation about like what your CAC to LTV ratio looked like wasn't necessarily kind of cool. And I think being able to understand that for some people, that's what I want to talk about at cocktail conversations. Like, that's my jam. And so being able to find people who that works for them, and not sort of like feeling some kind of artificial barrier on, it's not cool to talk about these kinds of things in social circles, has really been helpful to me. And I think, I hope that for women in business, we have more acceptance around talking about business, and particularly like how we help each other. So, you know, my group of closest friends were my first customers, and a lot of them are still here, and getting over that hump of saying, hey, you know, we're going out to dinner and I'm going to pitch you on buying my thing. That's like a weird first step to take if you have never done it before. And I think like I have taught myself that lesson, that helping very often means like, let's get some dollars involved in a way that makes sense. And like, you are my friends and I need you to be my first whatever's in this journey. And I guess it comes back to like blending that personal and professional and getting comfortable with the fact that those circles are perhaps overlapping.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And you mentioned before when we were talking that you found that community to be really supportive, like the personal community you've built with other, you know, women leaders and entrepreneurs and founders. Can you talk a little bit more about how that's evolved and what that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that I was certainly peppered with good intent when I was in business school was about the statistics around women in entrepreneurship. And I had come from tech, so I both knew the numbers as well as had lived the experience of kind of all the negative stuff that happens with the glass ceiling and the lack of leadership. And so I was aware, and I had accepted that as sort of a, not, I don't want to call it like a limitation, but perhaps like a negative. Like, that's the way I looked at it. Like, okay, well, this is going to suck because there's no, you know, this isn't like a friendly place for women. And so like, obviously I believe the data. And so like, this is going to suck. That was kind of like my outlook on it. And what I didn't realize, that I hope if women are thinking about getting involved in tech or entrepreneurship in any way, that maybe this can be your realization, that it is an incredibly supportive community, so much so that I would call it competitive advantage in this moment. And I have multiple examples of how that is true, where the community of women has provided me unfair advantage by extra help, extra mentorship, extra dollars because they're willing to try my product or invest in my company. And so I would say just like, be not afraid and realize that though the data is true, women are acutely aware. And I wouldn't leave men out of it either, because I think that there's awareness that goes beyond just women, where men are now aware of the fact that, like, hey, if X, Y, and Z woman has sort of like made it here, it's very likely that she's probably pretty damn good, because, you know, she's gone over some hurdles and whatever. And so I feel like that realization around like talent and arbitrage opportunities becoming more prevalent. And so, long-winded way of saying, be not afraid if you're thinking about doing it, because you will very likely have your advantage instead of the other way around.
Yeah. What are the steps that you'd recommend somebody take who doesn't yet see that as a competitive advantage in the way you do, where they see the statistics and they're facing the challenges, which are certainly real? What are the steps they can take to kind of get to that next level of the game, I guess, where you've sort of flipped the paradigm around and made it an advantage for you?
Yeah, a great question. So I would say two things. Like, one thing is that finding people who actually can help you, one, because they can, and when I say can, I guess it's like, think about what you're looking for. Like, if you want someone to be your mentor, for example, like, I would love for Indira Moody to be my mentor. Like, that's not actually accessible to me, right? So pick somebody who you have proximity enough with, and they actually can do the thing. If you want somebody to write you a $20,000 check, like, make sure it's somebody who actually can do that. There's so few female VCs in Seattle and in the Valley, for example. Like, if you are on day zero of your company, don't go ask one of them to be your mentor or to write you a check, because that thing is not accessible to you yet. However, if somebody has 5 customers and you have 0, you should go find them and figure out how they got 5 customers. And so I guess, like, the first thing is, like, find the people who actually can help you. And then the second thing is kind of like what we talked about before about asking. I think really hard, and I'm still like trying to learn about that, because, you know, I was asking Sherelle Klaus, who wrote Dry Soda, when am I going to stop asking people for things? Like, oh, sweetie, never. That's like the seat we're in here. And so just like repeatedly learning things. And the flip on that is that when people ask me for something and I can actually do it, I'm great about it. It really makes my day. So you can think about when you're asking, thinking about how it makes you feel when you actually help someone. Maybe it will help, or it will make you feel bad about asking. Because I think, like, as humans, we derive a lot of pleasure from being able to help others. And like, one of the life's like great joys is to see somebody that you had a small part or do really well. That's an amazing feeling. So ask for help.
Love it. Love it. It's a simple idea, right? But hard for a lot of us to do and to get over the fear of that. But I love the way, love the way you say that. You know, your business just strikes me as it scares me and how complicated it is. Like, the idea is so simple of like, oh yeah, I'll get the best clothes and it's going to be amazing. They're going to be recommended and they'll show up and I'll wear them and I'll send them back. But like, the logistics and dealing with all that goes into that sounds crazy. I'm curious, what are some of the times where, you know, you've really had to ask people for help, or where you saw really significant challenges that you had to go out and get help to solve?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. It's a daily thing. And the reasons are everything that you just listed, like trying to never before. We're trying to build a warehouse with operations processes and logistics that have never existed before. We're trying to build it with a community far out runs everything that exists in the market today. That said, like, so is every other entrepreneur, right? It's just like, this business has multi facets to it. So I think like the core challenge is actually the same for all entrepreneurs, because if you're not doing something better, faster, different than what exists, like, you know, why? But yes, I did pick a particularly complicated one, and I do ask myself why, probably daily. But to give you some specific examples of places where we've had people kind of like come through and help, it's on kind of the most micro things. Like, for example, last summer, we went from putting pieces of paper with a number on the tens of thousands of garments that we owned. Every single one had a piece of paper on it. And that piece of paper changed when the thing went to dry cleaning and went out to a customer and came back, whatever. And we made this shift to barcoding. And so before we did that, we asked everybody. So dry cleaners who use barcodes, what do you use? How does it work? And literally, like, my corner dry cleaner, like, how does this thing work? Okay, how about an RFID tag? So through, you know, friends of friends, we found an RFID tag that was being made in Italy that looked like it might be able to make it through dry cleanings and washes and whatever. And so, like, get on the phone, talk to that person, get on the phone and talk to other rental companies. So the Black Tux guys were super helpful to me in trying to understand, like, what these kind of, like, very tactical trade-offs. So it's everything from, you know, small to big. We're getting a lot of advice about building community right now because we're really investing in trying to figure out how we bring our community into the daily experience of the clothing, because we have this very tactical thing that binds our customers together. Like, they literally share items. How do we make that a richer thing? Because can they share their experiences with, like, how the thing fit? Can they share experiences about how it's styled, etc.? And people have solved this problem in different ways before. So we're talking to people that have built great communities in tech, like, you know, at Dropbox or at Stack Overflow. Can we talk to people who have understood this in travel? So, like, how do you get a flywheel going, and how do you sort of, like, make sure that there's a feedback loop for people to put stuff in and get stuff out? So yeah, I guess it's like, it really, we're trying to, like, every time we come up with a problem, we try to think about who are people who have solved this problem, perhaps not, you know, directly in the way that we're going to try to solve it, but how do we get in front of those people and hear what their lessons are?
I love that, right? Because, like you said, everything's been solved in some form or another, but it might not look exactly the same as your specific problem, but there's always somebody out there who has had a version of it, a flavor of it, right? Have you built that into your culture and with your team? Is this something that, you know, people have modeled off of the way you did this in the early stages and doing it now? Like, how does that become kind of a principle in your business?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So that is really something that I try to be kind of, like, there are certain things where you started this by saying, like, there are certain things that are religion and there are certain things that are, you know, an idea for now. Learning from other people is religion. It's not really a negotiable. We will always do it. We will get better at it. We won't get worse. Because it's all the things that you just said. People have solved these problems before. They want to help us. They want to share. And we can take a shortcut to the learning rather than sort of take the long cut of doing things ourselves. And so programmatically, one of the things that we've tried to do, and we're up to do it again, is at the leadership level, we call it, like, finding a buddy. So everyone needs to have a buddy outside of the organization who has solved some problems that are interesting to you. And they don't have to be your buddy into perpetuity, but whatever, you know, challenge in your sphere is really imminent. Make sure that you've got someone that you're talking to on a regular basis, because, like, one of the things that, and this is kind of, I guess, related to the question you were asking about, like, finding help and asking for help. One of the things that I think is true is that for people to be actually helpful to you, they do need a lot of context. So, like, it's interesting to me, especially early in this journey, and this is something I try not to do to other entrepreneurs. Lots of people said, hey, you know, I don't want to buy your thing. I don't want to invest in your company, but I'll mentor you. And it's sort of like, if I had 20 people who are all mentoring me, the tax on my time to bring them all up to speed to any level where they can sort of, like, really understand my challenges is pretty intense. And so instead, we try to have one or two buddies, all of us, like on an individual level, who have a lot of contacts and hopefully really like you as a person. So they like hanging out with you and like thinking through your stuff. But that's one way that we're trying to like bring external sort of like experts in. And then we have more formal structures. The company does have advisors who spend their time with us and have a stake in the company. So have, you know, a financial incentive to make sure that we win. And then learning from each other is obviously like a huge thing. I'm very proud of the fact that our more employees come from literally diversity of all types, you know, like these, they are amazing humans who have come from different walks of life, have different academic backgrounds, have different professional backgrounds. And so our ability to learn from each other is super real. And we try to create space to do that by sort of, you know, having kind of structured weekly places where we raise problems, like, hey, I'm trying to solve this, like, what does everybody think? We use a lot of collaboration device, kind of tools, so that we can put meteor problems on paper and have people think about them and go away and provide solutions and feedback and stuff like that. So yeah, core tenet, religion, learn from others.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's something you've really baked into the way you work. It's not just something that you put up on the wall.
Yeah, I think so. And honestly, I think it's survival, because I'm not sure how, you know, like, it's not a nice to have, especially in this business that we're in. Man, if we were trying to learn all these lessons ourselves, we'd be in big trouble.
Love it. All right. Well, I want to be respectful of your time here and wrap up with the Supersonic Six.
Yes.
So, number one, what other people and companies in Seattle or the Northwest do you admire the most?
So the companies in the Northwest that I admire the most, so that there's many. So I'll just give you a short list since this is a Supersonic Six. So Tomboy X, amazing underwear for all company that was started by Fran and Naomi down in South Seattle. I super admire the fact that they created a space through underwear that makes all people, literally all people, feel like they have a home. And it's an incredible brand. And I have been super fortunate to spend a bunch of time with the two of them and just like trying to understand like what it means to really live your brand and live your company. And so I admire them a ton. I'm super appreciative of them. So you had asked questions about like, what is this crew of women look like? They are definitely in my crew, and I will text them the most outrageous questions, like, you know, things that you would think you need a long sit down on, like, you know, what are vesting schedules for a CFO look like? And I'll just get a quick text back, and it's super useful, and there's no ego. And so, amazing company. Mona Akmal is running a new company called Falcon AI, which, amazing proposition. They're very young, but they're basically trying to take all of the marketing metrics that we all sweat over and give us automatic insight. So for example, you know, turns going up, here's an insight. Looks like your cohort from three summers ago is really hurting. Go check that out. So I think that there's a lot of focus on data-driven metrics, but actually sorting through that stuff can be teams and teams of people's jobs. And so trying to get some automation is super interesting. The Riveter, run by Amy Nelson, again, like, I guess this has probably been a theme. I'm obsessed with like brands that people are really walking in authentically. Amy is she's an incredible sort of steward for the movement, which, you know, I would call women in the workplace, and she lives those values, and it's super inspiring to watch her kind of like walk that walk. Alyssa at Gourmando, I look up to her a lot because she has done an incredible thing where Gourmando is a huge food company. It's got all sorts of different cafes and catering and But her, one of the secrets to her success, self-professed, is that she has found a workforce from people who may not necessarily like be in the mainstream. So she hires people who have maybe experienced homelessness or have experienced incarceration. And she has turned that into a positive for her business. And she has all kinds of like metrics about it. And it's just, it's a really inspiring story of like how you can use business with a double bottom line that really is like an everybody wins thing. And so I want to learn more about like what she has done there and how she's done it. So I'd list those four.
Oh, incredible list. Thank you for those shout outs. Number two, what's one thing that Seattle needs to improve as a startup hub?
Okay, so I'm very glad you asked this question, but I do not understand why in a region with so much diversity of successful companies, everything, you know, Microsoft, Costco, Bainbridge Jewelers, Boeing, like we're not monolithic at all. And I feel like I know from observation, the early capital in this city is not hunting diverse enough problems. So I want to see us, you know, solve for what's the next best dog toy as much as we're solving for like what's the next SaaS company. And I think it's incumbent on people who have experienced different kinds of success at Blue Nile or Nordstrom to reinvest dollars into companies where they're solving problems that look like things that we have walked as a region before. So less monolithic early funding.
That's a great insight. Yeah, it definitely diverges when you look at the successes being so diverse in terms of industries and problems. But then, yeah, a lot of the things getting funded are like B2B SaaS or well understood business models that, you know, the investors kind of can wrap their arms around easily.
Yep.
Number three, what book or books do you come back to most?
Recently, I read Shoe Dog, and I find myself coming back to particularly the lessons around, and Shoe Dog's about Nike and about the early days of Nike. And so, I really understand a very small part of this problem, but I'm obsessed with it, and I like thinking about it, and I'll travel for it, and I'll talk to more people about it. And so, I try to come back to that when I'm looking at, we didn't even talk about the pandemic, which is amazing. But when I think about like, hey, I'm sitting in this pandemic environment and like everything is going to hell, there are things that feel new to me that he kept coming back to and iterating on and just sort of like immersing himself in the passion space around that. And it really is an incredible story of love for the thing that he was doing and that being unlock, I'm able to kind of like see around corners.
Number four, what do you know today that you'd wish you'd known 10 years ago?
Yeah, so that also a great question. I think a couple things. Like one, I wish that I would have thought a bit more about all the professional building blocks that I was going to need. And maybe that's not a fair thing because I wouldn't have known, I guess, 10 years that I was going to end up here. But like, hey, it would have been really useful if I would have spent a year kind of like in an accounting department, for example, and getting like really practical, like interesting experience. I wish that I would have worked in a great logistics company. Like, what if I could have spent a year or two like in Costco's warehouse or in Amazon's warehouse learning about. So I think I've been fortunate to have a lot of different professional experiences, but I wish I would have had even more.
All right. Number five, what's a surprising learning or insight you've had in the last year?
I think a surprising insight that I've had is about the resiliency of a group of people. So there, I'll particularly like point to when the pandemic started to kind of like become very real. I know that it happened way too late because like we should have known it was coming. But when I remember understanding that it was coming, it was in the beginning of March, and we were coming off of the biggest month we had ever had. And there's something about just sort of like sitting every time in entrepreneurship when I have felt like I'm sitting on top of the mountain, like I should know that the mountain is going to crumble because it seems to just happen that way. And this is probably the first time that I've really lived through kind of like a major disaster that is so pervasive that a group of people that I'm very close to is living through it together. And this is, it's the worst thing that I've ever seen from a professional context. And I have felt more resilient through it than I've ever before. And I think it's because I'm having this like pretty crazy shared experience with my team, and I derive a ton of strength from that. And so I think the long-winded lesson on that would be like, if I can share things that are scary or things that I'm struggling with the people around me, it actually makes me feel better about it instead of worse, because I feel like we're gonna, you know, more energy around like solving is actually very comforting to me, rather than sort of like, I'm freaking out, I'm gonna solve this on my own.
I'm gonna send you a trophy for giving me the most positive perspective on the pandemic that I've heard so far. So thank you for that. You've made my day. All right, number six, the last one. What can this community do to help you? Is there anything that you want people to take a look at, or anything that you're working on that the listeners here can be helpful on?
Please try the product and send us feedback. I had no appreciation in a real way for how valuable customer feedback is until I started this business. It is everything to a company, and I hope that it will be everything to us forever, but certainly it is in these stages. And so the thing I would be so grateful is try the product, send me honest, actionable feedback, because we are every day working our tails off to do something. And the something is only as good as what we understand the problem to be. So help us see the problems from all the angles, and we will work our tails off to solve it.
Perfect. Where do they go to try the product? What's the easiest way to get started?
Armoire.style.
Okay, go to armoire.style and give the product a try, and then send very honest feedback and tell me if Ambika actually listens and how she responds, because I'm super curious.
And I'm Ambika@armoire.style, so easy to find.
Perfect, perfect. Yes, and where can people find you in social media or other places, anywhere that people can follow along?
Yeah, so we're on Instagram at armoire.style, and I'm personally on Instagram at AmbikaSI. We're on Facebook at armoire.style, and we're on LinkedIn. So Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, find us.
I love it. And I love it in fashion, you lead with Instagram. A lot of people I interview lead with LinkedIn. See, this is great. So we need that diversity of early stage funding in Seattle for sure.
We do.
Thank you so much for your time and your insights. I love this conversation. Thanks for being here.
I appreciate it. This was super fun.
Is it on? I think it's on. Hey, it's Adam again. Quick note before you go. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you're enjoying the show as much as I am enjoying making it. If you do like it, please leave a rating or a review. That would help other people find it in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And if you have any feedback, send me an email, adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com. No underscores, no periods, just adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com.